UK, Smoking Trends and Legal Milestones, 2001 to 2026. Part 1. Smoking Timeline and Prevalence, 25 years of data. In 2001, smoking prevalence was around 27%. The NHS expanded its stop smoking services nationally, and nicotine patches and gums became widely available on prescription. In 2002, prevalence was around 26%. The Tobacco Advertising and Promotion Act, 2002, was introduced, and NICE, the National Institute for Clinical Excellence, endorsed the use of nicotine replacement therapy. In 2003, prevalence was around 25%. Billboard and print media tobacco adverts were banned. The first modern e-cigarette was invented in China. In 2004, prevalence was around 24%. Direct tobacco marketing and sponsorships were banned, and the UK signed the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control in December. Nicotine lozenges gained market traction. In 2005, prevalence remained around 24%. The Framework Convention on Tobacco Control was enforced in February. The MHRA made several changes to nicotine replacement therapy, including youth prescriptions, over-the-counter availability, and methods of administration. In 2006, prevalence fell to 22%. The Health Act 2006 established the framework for the indoor smoking ban, and Champix, also known as varenicline, a prescription quitting pill, was approved. In 2007, prevalence fell to around 21%. The indoor smoking ban was enacted across the UK, and the legal purchase age for tobacco was raised from 16 to 18. In 2008, prevalence held around 21%. Graphic picture warnings became required on cigarette packs. Early generation e-cigarettes entered the UK market. In 2009, prevalence was around 20%. A ban on tobacco displays in shops was written into law and debated in the Scottish Parliament. The NHS began unofficially recommending vapes. In 2010, prevalence held around 20%. The ban on tobacco vending machines in England was finalized. Nicotine mouth sprays hit the shelves. In 2011, prevalence was 20.2%. The new ONS Annual Population Survey Tracking Series began, and the tobacco vending machine ban came into effect. E-cigarettes grew rapidly in popularity. In 2012, prevalence fell to 19.8%. The tobacco display ban was implemented in large English supermarkets. Vape shops began opening across UK high streets. In 2013, prevalence fell to 18.7%. Standardized tobacco packaging was first debated, and the tobacco display ban was brought into force. Second-generation tank system vapes launched. Prevalence fell to 18%. Public health campaigns heavily targeted youth smoking. The UK MHRA decided to regulate vapes as consumer goods. In 2015, prevalence fell to 17.2%. A ban on smoking in vehicles carrying children was introduced. Public Health England declared vaping 95% safer than smoking. In 2016, prevalence fell to 15.8%. Standardized, plain packaging laws were introduced. The EU Tobacco Products Directive capped vape nicotine strengths, and the first IQOS heat-not-burn device entered the market. In 2017, prevalence fell to 15.1%. Plain packaging became fully mandatory. Tobacco-free nicotine pouches emerged. In 2018, prevalence fell to 14.7%. Pod-based vapes, such as Juul, altered the market. In 2019, prevalence fell to 14.1%. Track and trace anti-smuggling rules were implemented, and the UK committed to its smoke-free 2030 target. Heated tobacco products such as IQOS gained a niche market, and Cytosine, a plant-based quitting pill, was approved in the UK. In 2020, prevalence fell to 13.8%. A menthol cigarette ban was implemented UK-wide. Disposable vapes such as Elf Bar surged in popularity. In 2021, prevalence fell to 13.3%. Tobacco duties rose consistently above inflation. Prescription vapes were considered by NHS England. In 2022, prevalence fell to 12.9%. The Conn Review recommended raising the buying age annually. E-cigarettes became the number one most used quit aid. In 2023, prevalence fell to 11.9%. The Swap to Stop scheme offered free vapes to 1 million smokers. In 2024, prevalence fell to 10.4%. The Tobacco and Vapes Bill was introduced to Parliament, and disposable vape bans were proposed due to youth uptake. cytisine became more widely available. In 2025, prevalence fell to around 10%, disposable vapes were banned, and smoke-free generation legislation moved forward. Next-generation smart vapes with puff trackers emerged. In 2026, prevalence fell to around 9.6%, as direct generational tobacco sales bans hit their implementation phases. Part 2, Refined Phase Breakdown, 2001 to 2026. Phase 1, Traditional Regulation and NRT Expansion, 2001 to 2010. Prevalence shifted from around 27% to around 20%. The key drivers were advertising and display bans, workplace and indoor smoking bans such as the Health Act 2006, raising the purchase age to 18, and the expansion of traditional NHS nicotine replacement therapy, patches, gums, and sprays. The driving factor in the years between 2001 and 2010 is commonly said to be the ban on advertising, displays, and smoking locations. On closer inspection, a timeline of alternate events indicates more recent market changes were likely the true driving factors. The NHS expanded its stop smoking service nationally in 2001, giving an open door to those who had wanted to quit but couldn't. Since 1996, the number of smokers had barely changed, and this expansion in access to help was the first in a line of actions that correspond directly to the reduction in smoking prevalence. Averaged across the years from 2001 to 2007, the rate dropped by almost 1 percentage point per year, with lulls and stagnation occurring around periods of government intervention that crossed the threshold of public perception. Periods of consistently falling smoker numbers also coincided with interventions from public health bodies and third-party companies offering over-the-counter cessation products. Examples include 2003 to 2006, which stalled amid advertising bans, 2007 and 2008, when smoking locations became controlled and graphic warnings began appearing on products, alongside further industry-level restrictions, and 2009, when vaping was an extremely niche market but had already caught the eye of the NHS. Each government intervention that crossed into public view was followed by a year or more of stagnation in smoking prevalence. The key driving factor between 2001 and 2010 for the reduction in smoking prevalence was the NHS and its promotion of products designed to help people quit. Phase 2, Early Vaping and Plain Packaging, 2011 to 2019. Prevalence shifted from 20.2% to 14.1%. The key drivers were early-stage refillable tank systems and pod vapes, the growth of high street specialist vape shops, the rollout of mandatory plain packaging, and Public Health England's explicit endorsement of vaping for harm reduction. 2011 was the last year of stagnation, with a recorded smoking rate covering a fifth of the population. E-cigarette designs were improving rapidly, with many people taking up the first cig-alike devices designed to emulate a cigarette. The previous 4 years, and 2011 as a fifth, had seen multiple regulations, from graphic imagery to bans on displays and sale, with the number of smokers in the UK holding at 20 to 21%. From 2011 onward, data shows a consistent drop in smoker numbers in line with several factors: the expansion of vapes as a product in the UK market, the growth of legitimate vape shops, which first expanded the market, advance in vape product technology, the MHRA's decision to regulate e-cigarettes as consumer goods, Public Health England backing vaping with the statement that it is 95% safer than smoking, and further product improvements, including the creation of the tobacco-free nicotine pouch. In 2016, Tobacco Products Directive regulations came into effect, ensuring products on the open market did not contain known toxic or carcinogenic ingredients. This also introduced rules on advertising and packaging, and gave government the power to ban flavors, flavor names, and specific ingredients. It banned combining active ingredients with nicotine, for example, caffeine and nicotine, and imposed other limitations. The vape industry largely accepted this oversight, as it helped ensure Public Health England's 95% safer claim was legitimate. The MHRA's decision not to regulate vapes as medicine also meant the industry couldn't market them as a smoking cessation aid without significant linguistic gymnastics. What the industry did not support were the other bans included in this directive: no advertising, no depicting economic advantage, no depicting flavors, such as showing fruit on a fruit-flavored vape, and many other rules within the TPD and later UK regulations that hobbled the industry's ability to legitimately expand. In 2019, the pandemic was looming on the horizon, and with talk of lockdowns circulating, momentum seemed to slip toward the end of the decade. Phase 3, the disposable vape surge, and general retail proliferation, 2020 to 2024. Prevalence shifted from 13.8% to 10.4%. The key drivers were high nicotine disposable vapes, such as Elf Bar and Lost Mary, entering mainstream retail, expanding from specialist vape shops into corner stores, newsagents, and supermarkets. This unprecedented accessibility drove a rapid drop in adult smoking prevalence, down to 10.4%. As with all things, it was expected that traction would eventually wane. However, in 2020, the UK saw the proliferation of disposable vapes. This countered heavily misguided media coverage at the time on the supposed benefits of smoking, which misconstrued early observational data regarding smoking and COVID-19 hospitalization risks. This allowed the continued reduction to persist, even if at a slower pace than it might otherwise have achieved. Disposable vapes offered an easily distributed product in a single strength, 20 milligrams per milliliter, which rapidly proliferated through the convenience sector. Many sources point to tobacco taxation as the largest driving force behind the reduction in smoking, but market expansion of an NHS and Public Health England-backed product carries much more weight in the consistent erosion of the tobacco industry. This can be seen directly in the data on vaping prevalence in the country. With a portion of vapers still smoking for part of their quitting journey, crossover and lag are very common in the data on smoking and vaping. Here is the year-by-year breakdown of adult smokers and adult vapers as a percentage of the population, alongside the estimated number of people in each group. In 2011, 20.2% of adults were smokers, around 10.3 million people, while around 1% were vapers, roughly 500,000 people. In 2012, 19.8% were smokers, around 10.1 million people, while 1.7% were vapers, around 800,000 people. In 2013, 18.7% were smokers, around 9.5 million people, while 2.7% were vapers, around 1.3 million people. In 2014, 18% were smokers, around 9.2 million people, while 4.2% were vapers, around 2.1 million people. In 2015, 17.2% were smokers, around 8.8 million people, while 5.4% were vapers, around 2.7 million people. In 2016, 15.8% were smokers, around 8.1 million people, while 5.7% were vapers, around 2.9 million people. In 2017, 15.1% were smokers, around 7.7 million people, while 5.8% were vapers, around 2.9 million people. In 2018, 14.7% were smokers, around 7.4 million people, while 6.2% were vapers, around 3.2 million people. In 2019, 14.1% were smokers, around 7.1 million people, while 7.1% were vapers, around 3.6 million people. In 2020, 13.8% were smokers, around 6.9 million people, while 6.3% were vapers, around 3.3 million people. In 2021, 13.3% were smokers, around 6.6 million people, while 7.1% were vapers, around 3.7 million people. In 2022, 12.9% were smokers, around 6.4 million people, while 8.3% were vapers, around 4.3 million people. In 2023, 11.9% were smokers, around 6.0 million people, while 9.1% were vapers, around 4.8 million people. In 2024, 10.4% were smokers, around 5.3 million people, while 10.7% were vapers, around 5.7 million people. In 2025, around 10% were smokers, around 5.1 million people, while 10.4% were vapers, around 5.6 million people. In 2026, around 9.6% were smokers, around 4.9 million people, while 10.3% were vapers, around 5.5 million people. This data is sourced from the Office for National Statistics and includes some users under the age of 18. Action on Smoking and Health reports indicate that, when looking only at adults aged 18 and over, smoking is still more prevalent than vaping. Disposable bans and stalling cessation momentum, 2024 to 2026. Prevalence shifted from 10.4% to around 9.6%. The key drivers were the announcement and implementation of UK-wide disposable vape bans, alongside restrictions on marketing and flavors, which caused the rapid drop in smoking rates to stall. policy focus shifted toward the tobacco and vapes bill and generational phase-outs. Smoking rates had consistently fallen by over half a percentage point most years, with some years exceeding a full percentage point, from 2011, when vaping gained traction in the UK, through to 2024, when disposables were announced to be banned, at which point the rate of decline was around 0.75% per year. Then came the disposable ban, and media coverage shifted against vaping, widely making claims of unknown chemicals, a cowboy unregulated industry, and widespread health concerns. Following this, the data shows a sharp drop in the switch from smoking to vaping, with vaping showing its first downward trend in 15 years. Smoking, on the other hand, slowed in its decline, reducing to an estimated 0.4% drop per year for 2026. Based on this data, prominent health action by public health bodies, such as the NHS and Public Health England, alongside product availability, appears to be the primary driving factor of the stop smoking movement. Duty and taxes on tobacco help recover a fraction of the costs attributed to tobacco use, but they do not actively stop people from smoking, nor persuade them away, because vape companies have not legally been allowed to market products based on cost-effectiveness compared to smoking. As the primary competition to the vape industry is not the tobacco industry, but illicit markets, imposing restrictions on the vape industry beyond what is currently present will not benefit either the legitimate industry or the stop smoking movement. Changing packaging to mimic cigarette packaging risks suggesting to the average person, half of whom already believe vaping is as harmful or more harmful than smoking, that vaping is dangerous. These measures carry a distinct risk of slowing further reductions in smoking or unintentionally driving consumers back toward combustible tobacco or illicit markets. Part 3. Policy counter-arguments and market realities. It is proper to identify that with every argument, there is a counter-argument. Five primary counter-arguments are addressed below, each with a rebuttal. The five counter-arguments are the hardening smoker hypothesis concerning diminishing returns, youth protection versus adult harm reduction concerning population risk level, policy lag and the denormalization effect, economic consensus on tobacco taxation and illicit market skepticism, and the role of enforcement authorities. Counterargument 1, the hardening smoker. The reduction in the rate of people quitting smoking from 0.75 percentage points per year to 0.4 percentage points is argued to be not due to the disposable ban or the tobacco and vapes regulations, but instead an example of diminishing returns, as the core of the inelastic group of smokers is reached. The rate of smoking cessation slows at an increasing rate. While this argument is partly true, it detracts from other facts and ignores the implications for national health when implementing and advertising such policies. First, the inelastic group of hardened smokers is the hardest group to move from their current position and is the group that needs more options presented to them, not fewer. While some believe the hardened smoker is not a real phenomenon, this group behaves like any other addiction cohort, the most addicted or least concerned about the effects. With more options, this group is more likely to try an alternative. Second, consider the effect of negative advertising on this group. Those who dispute the hardened smoker concept also argue that this group is influenced by the language and metaphors used around smoking, becoming what they are described as. In either case, constant negative reference to vapes reinforces negative ideas in those who have not switched. Falds and colleagues, in 2022, found that e-cigarette use was three times more likely to result in continued cessation from traditional cigarettes after 24 weeks than other methods, for those considered part of the hardened smoker group, a finding repeated across multiple countries, with vaping stated on average to be roughly 50% more effective as a stop smoking aid. Counterargument 2, youth protection versus adult harm reduction. It is argued that banning products prevents youth access, and this must be weighed against the benefits of adult harm reduction from stopping smoking. This is highly misguided, as evidenced by trading standards data on seizures. Banning a product doesn't stop it being present in the market. It makes it a problem for enforcement to control, increasing their responsibilities while reducing how much they can effectively police. This also does not meaningfully affect youth access. Proxy purchasing may be reduced, but the primary source of these products for youth is not the legitimate market. Most young people, if asked by an authority figure, would name a vape shop or point to a legitimate source because they know they are buying illegally, and pointing authorities toward their actual seller would cost them access to their supply. This has been the case for decades, since before the legal age of sale on tobacco was raised to 18. Those who cannot purchase legally, but want the product, will find an illicit method of obtaining it. Second, consider the framing of the problem. Protecting children insinuates several things to the public. It demonizes an industry and a product, and suggests the product carries serious health risks, comparable to tobacco. This in turn tells adults who might otherwise quit smoking using e-cigarettes, and who are on the fence, not to do so, not directly, but by persuading them the products are as dangerous or more dangerous than smoking. Third, it targets lawful, law-abiding companies aiming to help the stop smoking movement for the actions of others outside the industry. It punishes law-abiding adults using these products to quit smoking for the actions of people they have no connection to. It also implicates the legitimate industry as the cause of the issue, reducing public trust in legitimate businesses and their ability to grow. In short, policies controlling legitimate business do not protect children, as they do not target those who actually enable youth addiction. Counterargument 3. Denormalization and policy lag. Policy lag is the time it takes for a policy to show its effects in society, with denormalization being the change that is sought. Ideally, this trend would show a lull in a statistic, followed by policy, followed by the statistic moving in the desired direction. What the data actually shows is that in 2001, the NHS began directing public perception around smoking, shifting it from a smoking culture toward a stop smoking culture. From this point, prevalence dropped by 1 percentage point year on year. The lag effect of the NHS's work did not bear fruit until 2002, but continued with great success through to 2007. In 2006, policies were drafted, and in 2007 they were implemented, with the premise that this was needed to curb smoking in society. 2007 marked the end of the long downward trend in smoking prevalence from the early 2000s. This lag was labeled many things during the later 2000s and into the 2010s, from a loss of momentum, to a poverty problem, to the hardened smoker. But the government's own reasoning at the time was locking in the 25% drop in smokers already achieved. The result was 5 years in which the stop smoking movement stalled, rather than continuing to progress. The then Health Secretary Andrew Burnham himself said they needed to focus policy heavily on the new flow of smokers coming in, rather than restricting the liberties of smokers who are already there. Something the current generational ban does in part actually achieve by preventing current youth smokers from legally continuing to smoke as adults. He also said in the same interview, "We've allowed ourselves to have this nanny state tag thrown at us by not being clear about the limits of where it's right to go. We've got to be more cautious and precise in our language." Precision does not appear to have carried through into his own premiership, given his government has described businesses that do not make a positive contribution to their communities, like vape shops. Current government policy instead smears the most effective stop smoking aid available, reducing the effective adult harm reduction offered by vaping. Flying in the face of these government comments is Public Health England's own report, published in 2021, highlighting that 27.2% of smokers who quit used a vape product, with a success rate between 59.7% and 74% when combined with stop smoking services, making it one of the most successful stop smoking aids available. It also highlighted that in 2017 alone, an estimated 50,000 or more smokers quit who would not otherwise have done so. Further studies from Brunel University London found that if 50% of smokers switched to vaping, the NHS would save over £500 million. Since 2011, when electronic cigarettes entered the market, smoking prevalence has followed a continuous downward trend because the NHS and stop smoking services have had an effective substitution bridge for smokers. Current and proposed policies risk burning this bridge for several reasons. First, cost margin. Targeting legitimate businesses for the actions of illicit or illegal traders harms the health benefits the vape industry provides. Second, unintentional harm to reputation. Demonizing the entire industry damages the image of every company that has operated in the market from the beginning. Third, focusing on negatives and speculating unsupported claims of potential harm strengthens the belief that vaping is as dangerous or more dangerous than smoking. Fourth, obscuring visibility. The 2013 mandatory packaging graphics and the 2016 standardized packaging regulations arrived during the period of vaping's uptake. These two regulations are often credited with impacting smoking numbers, but they coincided with the vape industry's period of growth. As flavor is an important factor in a vape's effectiveness, and each brand has a different way of presenting each flavor, forcing plain packaging or covering products in stores, reduces their visibility to the hardest-to-reach group of smokers. The focus should instead be on strengthening penalties for illegally selling to minors and increasing checks on new companies entering the sector to prevent bad actors. Mr. Burnham himself is quoted as saying, "I had a couple of cigarettes under the slide in a park when I was 14, and that was it. I couldn't cope with it." While the current generational ban is a reasonable move to prevent new smokers taking up the habit once they turn 18, it overlooks the fact that many of these individuals are already smoking well before that age. Counter-argument 4. Economic consensus on tobacco taxation. Taxation of tobacco is often described as the most reliable tool for driving down smoking prevalence. In the 16th century, Queen Elizabeth I imposed a duty on tobacco of 2 pence per pound, equivalent to roughly £1.43 to £1.49 in modern terms. Which sounds very high, especially given average wages at the time were around 7 pence a day. But per modern packet, this equates to only around 4 pence. King James I later levied his counterblast tax on tobacco, raising the duty to the modern equivalent of roughly £2.48 per packet of cigarettes. Despite this opposition, the tobacco market still boomed, showing that even as a new product, taxation alone did not dissuade its use. It would be unwise to dismiss the differences between the 16th and 17th centuries and the modern, scientific, internet-connected age. Information now travels faster and further than ever before. While taxation does add an element of persuasion toward better choices, it is not as singularly effective as often claimed. After the Second World War, cigarette use was at an all-time high, with roughly 80% of men and almost half of women reportedly smoking. Between 1945 and the mid-1970s, this dropped to around 40 to 45%, with official government records beginning around this time, alongside rising taxes. From here until the 1990s, a slower rate of decline occurred. The key difference between these two periods was the underlying mechanism. In the post-war era, information on cancer risk was being pushed toward men, whereas after the 1970s, the focus shifted toward monetary influence. While bans on advertising were rightly introduced to prevent historical harms to public health, such as tobacco advertising targeted at women, the effect of monetary incentive may be given more credit than it deserves. In the 1990s, the number of smokers largely flatlined, coinciding with government changes and rapidly rising prices, with the cost simply being absorbed by consumers. In the early 2000s, the NHS pushed better health information alongside accessible services, and prevalence declined again. Historically, this shows that the presence of health information and knowledge appears to be the primary driving factor in reducing smoking prevalence, while heavy-handed government control tends to increase rigidity and public pushback. Counter-argument 5. Illicit market skepticism and enforcement authorities. It is sometimes argued that illicit trade is purely an enforcement issue for HMRC and trading standards. This is, in effect, passing the buck. It ignores cases where policy targets the wrong group in favor of scoring political points. While many in the vape industry, this author included, were supportive of the disposable vape ban, using youth vaping as the sole justification, ignored the illicit trade and the wider impact on vaping's image as a stop smoking aid. It also overlooks the fact that the vast majority of youth vapers are current or former smokers, according to Action on Smoking and Health in 2026. Dismissing illicit market growth as purely an enforcement issue ignores statistics from global authorities on the realities of regulatory enforcement. Agencies estimate that only 10 to 20% of illicit imports are ever intercepted. Imposing regulations that target legitimate businesses grows the illicit market's share and increases the burden on trading standards. A closing note from the author: while many of the points raised here run directly counter to government controls on these products, this does not represent the author's full position on the issue. The point being made is that current controls are being credited with achievements that belong to other factors, that these controls are causing harm to other, more effective methods, and that the way controls are discussed publicly is causing more harm to public health than the good they bring. Serious consideration must be given to future policy, with a direction that focuses far more heavily on supporting Public Health England, the NHS, HMRC, and trading standards, and on creating frameworks for good industry practice, rather than attempting to control the public through heavy taxation and broad statements that demonize those doing the right thing. The primary driving factor in Stop Smoking success between 2011 and 2026 has been the NHS Stop Smoking Service, alongside the availability and easy access of an effective and successful substitution bridge designed to support nicotine reduction. The following recommendations are offered for consideration in future policy to achieve the greatest benefit to the public. Implementing licensing systems that allow local councils and trading standards to quickly identify good, public-oriented businesses versus potentially antisocial companies. Working with the MHRA to continue ensuring the best quality products reach the market. Working with the NHS to ensure companies that qualify as good public-oriented businesses can access a broader area of the country. Reforming vape products duty to accurately reflect the goal of reducing nicotine intake. Maintaining a higher duty rate on 20 mg per milliliter products while reducing duty logarithmically as nicotine strength lowers. And directing the resulting revenue into policing the practices that damage what should be a positive harm-reducing industry. Controls are necessary. Disposable vapes were genuinely wasteful and arguably designed to keep people addicted. The framing of that ban, however, should have reflected this more precisely, with a message along the lines of, those looking to quit smoking should seek out a specialist company and discuss what is available to them. This concludes the report. Sources include the Office for National Statistics, the House of Commons Library, the Royal Society for Public Health, the UK Department of Health and Social Care, and the MHRA, and Action on Smoking and Health, along with several peer-reviewed studies and news reports referenced in the original document.